True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You can follow me specifically at T Tucker WWL on X. 72 degrees right now, clear, going up to 90 today. 90 tomorrow, 88, 88, 88. Going to be hot and dry for the week ahead all the way through next Saturday. Good news is tropics are quiet. No worries there. No rain, though. But, hey, we'll take it, right? And that means Saturday night in Tiger Stadium. I guess you'll be looking at temperatures in the maybe mid-80s, something like that. Lower humidity, hopefully. So it might be nice. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist to talk about what's going on. I have this talent. Where I can repeat whatever anybody's saying right after they say it, and it sounded like what somebody was doing to me. Anyway, in Tiger Stadium, should be a nice night as the Tigers take on the Florida Gators. Jeff Palermo is going to help us do that momentarily. LSU is a between 7.5, 9.5 point favorite, depending on where you get your make your bets or where you get your odds. The total on the game is 48.5. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director, joins us now. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, Tommy. Hey, Tommy. How you doing?
How are you doing? I had that talent. I can always repeat what everybody says right after they say it. It'll drive people crazy. I'll tell you what. Also might sometimes get you divorced. Let's talk about LSU Florida, shall we, Jeff? What did LSU spend the week doing? Do you know?
Well, one part of it was getting healthy, Tommy. That was the big thing. The two guys that got banged up in that game against Louisiana Tech, starting center Braylon Moore and tight end Tre'Davious Green, trying to get ready for this game. Based on what Coach Brian Kelly is telling us, looks like Braylon Moore should be ready to go. And that when he went down on the first play from scrimmage against Louisiana Tech, you're sitting there going, uh-oh, that looks like the dreaded high ankle sprain. Mm-hmm. That looks like a 4 to 6 week injury, but here he is. He's bouncing back. He's been able to practice all week. And
Jeff, do we know what he had?
He had an ankle injury, but it is not as severe as what it looked like when it occurred. Now, Tre'Davious Green, I don't think will play. They're listing him as questionable, but he's got a knee injury, and this looks like it's going to need a little bit of time. So I could see him not playing Saturday. I could see him not playing against Southeastern Louisiana next week. And then hopefully he's ready to go on the road to Oxford at the end of the month and take on the Ole Miss Rebels. As far as what else LSU is working on, I think, you know, trying to get this offense on track. It has been a bit of a sluggish start. They were good enough to beat Clemson on, obviously in the season opener. They had a nice balanced attack. They made enough plays, won the game 17-10. Last week, just 23 points against Louisiana Tech, who does have a good defense, but 23 points, not acceptable. Focus necessarily wasn't there, according to Coach Brian Kelly. So they should be ready to go for the SEC opener against a Florida team that really comes into this contest desperate with its backs up against the wall after losing last week to South Florida.
So when it comes to LSU, I'm looking at the way the schedule lays out. You get all excited about Clemson, then you play Louisiana Tech, and you got a less than stellar effort, right? So you got Florida coming in first SEC game. Then you got southeastern Louisiana next week, and after that you got Ole Miss, so you could see where it could be a roller coaster kind of season for LSU, hopefully, though, getting wins against the weaker opponents.
You know what? I like how the schedule breaks down. I'd rather have this than what Florida has to face here coming up, where you have four ranked teams. I mean, after this game for Florida, they got to play Miami. Then they get a bye. They host Texas, and they take on Texas A&M. I mean, that's grueling. I kind of like the idea of LSU, tough game, then a game you should win, get another tough game, then have another game. I just, especially early on, it helps you ease into the season. And even as you look at the schedule going forward, it's not like LSU has this really difficult gauntlet stretch of where they're going to potentially play, you know, three teams that are ranked in the top 10 in consecutive weeks. They don't really have that. They, you know, you get Arkansas placed in there, and you get Vanderbilt in there, and you know, there are some lesser opponents that you're going to have to go after, and it helps break up the schedule.
You know, just saying that, it's hard to believe that this is already a third game for the Tigers, and you just scroll through and you see how quickly the season goes by, right? Although, let's hope it doesn't end on November 29th, and let's hope there's a lot of postseason play for the Tigers.
Yeah, and, you know, so far, I mean, looking at the landscape of college football after 2 weeks, I think LSU is certainly a team that's know it has its issues, especially, you know, offensively, but I think you would rather take this right now, an offense that's trying to find itself with some new personnel, a new offensive line, new receivers, a new starting tight end. You're trying to get a running game going that you really haven't been able to get going over the last couple of years. So you're working on some things on that side, but it's refreshing that the defense looks really good. And they'll get tested again here this Saturday. Now, DJ Lagway, the Gators quarterback, he is off to a bit of a rough start. This kid cannot stay healthy. He has been battling injury after injury. Even going back to last year's game when LSU played Florida, he had the hamstring injury. And then in spring football, he had a shoulder and he had a sports hernia. And then he had a calf injury in fall camp. And so he hasn't practiced hardly at all, and it's shown in this game. He's not accurate. He's having trouble reading defenses. Frankly, it looks a little bit overweight. Now he seems like he's had a decent week of practice, meaning he's been able to be out there every day, and so we'll see if that helps and results in Florida being able to be an explosive offense, because the one thing that he can really do is get the ball downfield and hit on some deep passes. But the other guy that LSU really needs to worry about in this game is Florida's running back.
Let me pick it up there when we come back. All right, Jeff, we'll pick it up with Florida's running back. Jeff Palermo, our guest, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. He's got a nice story up at WWL.com talking about LSU hopes to get its offense in gear against the Gators. When we come back, we'll talk about Florida getting its offense in gear against the Tigers and their running back when we return. 6:22 now, traffic, WWL. 6:27, Tommy Tucker, WWL, LSU taking on Florida in Death Valley Saturday night. All of it right here on WWL. LSU lost in the Swamp last year, but they won five of the last six. And fun fact, the whole all-time series, and I found this out from the article that Jeff's got up now at WWL.com, 34-34-3. So that's about as even as it gets, right?
It is. And it's also a little bit surprising. It's the first time these two teams have played each other in September since 1984, and only the third time ever. If you remember, for so long, the game was always either the first or second Saturday in October.
A big game in October.
Like, yeah, yeah, usually always a really big game. But
I saw somebody the other day, the networks have their B-roll queued up of the alligator cooking on the rotisserie spit, right?
Tell me about
the running back at Florida before we run out of time.
Jaden Ball is, I think he might be one of the best running backs in the Southeastern Conference. I mean, the guy's elusive. He's got great vision, not easy to tackle. He's considered the strongest guy on Florida's team pound for pound, and he's averaged 7 yards a carry, and he's running behind an experienced offensive line. And as DJ Lagway continues to try to sort his own issues out and try to get into a little bit more of a groove, I think they're going to really try to lean on Jaden Baugh as much as possible here against LSU's defense.
So when it comes to Garrett Nussmeier, I know you talk about revenge game in your piece at WWL.com, but he's got to keep all that under control, right?
Yeah, he certainly did. He certainly does. He had a rough game last year in Gainesville. It did not go well. If you remember going into last year's game, he had barely been sacked at all going into that game in November. I think he had only been sacked like six times or something like that. He ended up getting sacked seven times in one game against Florida. And LSU had so much trouble trying to prevent Florida from pressuring him really up the middle. If you remember, Garrett Dellinger, LSU's offensive guard, was out with an injury. They had Paul Mubenga in there. DJ Chester was the starting center, and he really struggled. And Nussmeier had a very, very rough game. They just got after him, and there were tackles for losses, 11 of them in the game. So we'll see if LSU's offensive line is up to the task. Florida's defensive line is not as formidable as
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It was a year ago, but they are getting back one of their better defensive tackles, Caleb Banks, who had a really big game against LSU last year. He comes back in this game, so that's a big lift for Florida. They're going to need him and see if they can't make life a little rough for Garrett Nussmeier.
Think LSU wins?
I got LSU winning this game, Tommy. I like LSU to win 28-17.
All right, now we move on to southeastern Louisiana. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it as always. We'll be listening for you over the weekend. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. When we come back, we'll talk about manufacturing, jobs, Liberation Day, and tariffs. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 6:42, 18 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Friday morning, September 12th. Willie Shee joins us, professor of management practice at Harvard Business School. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Tucker. I'm very good. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. Let's talk about the U.S., because first of all, when we talk about losing manufacturing jobs, I think it's a fair question. So many times we see jobs numbers, then we see jobs revisions. I don't know. Where does this fit into all of that stuff that we hear?
Well, you know, Tommy, the long-term trend over the last 20 years has been kind of slowly declining manufacturing jobs, okay? And partly that's because, yeah, we're building some new factories and stuff, although, you know, we ran into some problems in Georgia the other day. But, you know, we are building new factories. But, you know, people are continuing to automate. People are continuing to move some production to lower-cost regions, right? So on balance, manufacturing jobs have been kind of on this slow, steady decline. And, you know, we saw that jobs report just come out a couple of days ago, wasn't so good, you know, where they revised down manufacturing employment.
You know, you mentioned the, quote, trouble at the plant in Georgia. And to me, that was the entire story, the whole issue in microcosm, because it's about manufacturing. It's about whether or not U.S. Workers are qualified to do the jobs. It's about if they are they going to work for more, or you have to pay them more than you will the people from the other country because the union president was complaining that those jobs are that are those that Americans could have had. And if that is the case and Americans could have done those jobs, then would that have meant the end result would have been higher cost for everybody? If you understand what I'm trying to ask you, Professor, it just seemed like that was the whole thing in microcosm to me.
Well, you know, I think there's another thing people forget when we talk about bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. What they were making in Georgia, we've never made those things. We've never made those batteries in the U.S., so we don't have the production equipment. We don't have the know-how. Okay, so when you talk about I want to hire local people, it's like I'm all for it. You know, it's like let's hire local people. But what happens to the local people don't know how to do all those things? And those people were like contractors installing machinery and getting up and running. And then they were going to train American workers. Okay, mm-hmm. And that's how, if you've never made it before, that's how you learn, right? That's how China, for example, learned how to make a lot of stuff because people went in and trained them. Okay, so now we have to do the same. So that was kind of an interesting microcosm, like you say. I happened to be talking to a senior person at another Korean company a few days after that, and it's like, you know, I asked them how they were feeling, and they said, well, we're kind of confused. On the one hand, you want us to bring this stuff over, but then you won't let us help you, you know? And like I said, I think the thing people forget is we've never made a lot of these things in the U.S. Well, right? You know, so how are we going
to
learn?
And, Professor, I think it goes to the definition of manufacturing jobs because people think it's like that movie Gung Ho from the 80s, I think was the name of it, where, you know, or a factory assembly line where you just go and look, just stand there and screw this onto that and you'll be fine. But that's not really the nature of manufacturing anymore, is it?
Not in the U.S. In the U.S., we tend to have, you know, higher end manufacturing, higher tech, higher value products. You know, if you're trying to, I was talking to somebody who used to sell $20 blenders at Walmart, okay? You know, if you want to make $20 blenders that you're going to sell in Walmart, those, by the way, are up to $34 now, by the way. Okay, but if you're going to do that, you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it in the U.S. Our labor costs are much higher than you'd ever be able to do that. And B, we don't have people who want to work on those jobs. Okay, so then, and you see that in food processing factories across the country and especially ag work where a lot of the workers are, in fact, migrants, some of them undocumented, right? But, you know, we can't get enough Americans who want to do those jobs, right? So there's a lot of, like, conflicting stuff going on these days and leads to a lot of confusion.
Won't do those jobs or don't want those jobs at what they pay or just don't want those jobs?
Don't want those jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been in a number of factories. I was in one really good factory where they're making cars, okay? And the plant manager was saying, you know, it's really hard to get young people to do those jobs. You know, assembling a car is hard work, mm-hmm. right? It's physical. You got to move around. You know, he said a lot of young people these days, they'd rather sit behind a screen. They don't want to do jobs like that. Mm-hmm. It was in another factory where they said, people is like, no, I'd rather work in McDonald's than do this. It's like, so, you know, a lot of factories, and this has been true for the last 10, 15 years for sure, you know, because like I've been in a lot of factories in the U.S., and you look around and they're all immigrants working there.
So let me go back to your blender, $20 at Walmart, which is now $34. What's the future of that blender looking like? I'm not going to buy a warehouse, Professor, and you know, use it as my 401k or anything like I do with the Forever Stamps. I have a whole warehouse full of Forever Stamps that I bought at 30 cents.
Tommy, I got Forever Stamps too, but you know, one of the things that has happened in this country is, you know, before the tariffs, before Liberation Day on April 2nd, a lot of people were so-called front running. It's like, I'm going to bring in as much stuff as I can before the tariffs go up. Okay. And then we had April 2nd. So then the imports fell off a cliff. Then we had this pause. So then there was this rush of imports. All right. So it's going to depend how much stuff people brought in, how much of it goes obsolete. Now we've already seen like in fashion goods, TJX, discount chain, you know, one of the things they do is they buy other retailers' mistakes, you know, when they got the wrong inventory, And in their earnings call a couple days ago, they said the buying environment is terrific right now. Basically, you know, they're buying up some of the excess inventory that people tried to front run, but they got wrong. Right. When people, I think what's happening right now, depending on the company.
By front run, you mean get ahead of tariffs, Professor?
Get ahead of tariffs. Okay. I'm going to import it before. Okay. People are bringing in container loads and truckloads of stuff and storing it, you know, just at the lower cost. But as that stuff runs down, and we're starting to see it now in different sectors, you know, it starts running down, we're going to start seeing price increases. You know, so get back to your original question, that $34 blender, that becomes a $40 or $50 blender pretty soon.
So eventually it comes to a point where you could have the blender manufactured. This is Trump's long plan. You could have the blender manufactured in America instead of overseas. However, they got a couple of problems with that. First of all, the manufacturing company has to be assured before they make the capital investment in plants here to manufacture blenders or whatever it is, that the economic environment's going to be friendly toward that. Secondly, they have to make sure that they have workers that are willing to do that. And thirdly, the end result is that blender creeps closer to $50 or $60 or $70. The consumer is going to have to pay a lot more than they are now. Am I making anything up or not?
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on, Tommy. And one other thing is, like, you know, blenders, they always have that glass container on top. Mm-hmm. We used to make those in the U.S. We don't make them in the U.S. anymore, okay? So we don't have people who know how to make them. We don't have anybody who makes the machines who, you know, do that kind of glass work, right? So, you know, it's not so easy to move that back, right? But it's like, I think we're also going to see that in ag products, okay? It's like, okay, we'll put a tariff on South Africa, right? So, you know, they exported oranges to the U.S. It's like already the guys down there are saying, okay, I'll send them to Asia or the Middle East instead. I'm not going to send them over here. So that also means reduced choice over time, right? Higher prices and reduced choice. I think we're going to see that. We're going to see a lot of that, you know, through the rest of the year. We'll see it in food prices. We'll see it in a lot of these lower-priced commodities, you know, lower-priced products that you and I count on every day. But we're going to feel it. It's coming.
All right, first of all, let me take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about how much tariffs have contributed to the Treasury. That's if the court withholds them, because if not, then they've not contributed anything to the Treasury, and the U.S. is going to have to refund that money back at a cost, a processing cost included in that. So it's going to be a net loss to the taxpayers. But I just want to talk long-term about this, if this is likely to happen, because, man, Professor, I had a conversation with somebody 25 years ago about wages in the Pacific Rim and how the standard of living is different, and the U.S. can never compete with that, because if you get somebody in the Pacific Rim can work for $3 a day, U.S. dollars a day, and you got to pay somebody here $50 a day, the prices are going to go up and demand's going to go down, and we'll it can only go so far. 6:52, 8 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:57 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Willie Shee, professor of management practice at Harvard Business School. We're talking about manufacturing jobs and tariffs. Professor, let me ask you a big, long question, then you can jump in. So the Supreme Court's going to hear the case on tariffs, whether the president can institute them or apply them without Congress. They'll hear that in the first week of November. If not, the U.S. is going to have to refund what they've already collected, which is about 2.7% of the federal budget. If that's the case, to whom do they refund that money? And if tariffs are, in fact, a tax on the taxpayers, if companies have passed those costs along to the consumers, do the consumers get a rebate or do the companies keep that money? Thoughts?
Well, that's the complicated problem. You probably saw, Tommy, that they collected $30 billion in tariffs in the month of August, which was all-time high. Now, if they have to refund it, you know, frankly, that's a nightmare. Okay. Will those refunds go directly to consumers? Well, you know, companies, what they can do is they can lower prices back down and, you know, give some back to future buyers. But, you know, if you bought a $34 blender that used to cost $20, you know, I don't know how you're ever going to get that money back, right? So that money's gone.
Wall Street would love a refund because that would mean companies' bottom lines are currently boosted, right? If they,
oh, for sure.
Yeah.
It'll be boosted.
I'm just looking at the big picture here, the long game, Professor. That's all.
Yeah, I think the other thing that'll happen, though, is like the Supreme Court rules against it. I think we can count on the administration to find some other vehicle to justify the tariff. So it's not over yet.
Thank you, Professor. I appreciate your time and your insights as always. Willie Shih, Professor of Management Practice at Harvard Business School. Nothing is easy. This is a very complicated subject. And as the president said, he thinks it's short-term pain for long-term gain. It would indicate that's not necessarily going to happen when you look at what companies have to take into account when it comes to capital investment to manufacture goods and the workers that are involved. And also if the people of the United States can afford to pay the higher prices for American manufactured goods. But we'll see how it plays out. When we come back, we'll talk about women and children in Louisiana bearing the brunt of economic hardship. And then we'll talk to Meg Ferris about hyperbaric chambers. A lot coming up. Stay with us.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like watermelon, wild berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.